And, you know, Marianne Williamson says it, faith is not blind, it's visionary. So that's the stories that we love.
Welcome to Story Power, a new bi-monthly podcast where my guests and I geek out about the stories we are passionate about in all different genres, styles, and formats. And we'll give a few recommendations to you, our listeners. Beware possible spoilers ahead. My name is Lucinda Sage Midgordon, and I started this podcast during the COVID-19 pandemic. As I watched the reaction of my social media circle, I noticed that many people turned to stories for comfort and help in making sense of the craziness going on around them. And as all good stories do, the world got even crazier. But as Neil Gaiman says, fairy tales are more than true, not because they tell us that dragons exist, but because they tell us that dragons can be beaten. Since I believe that stories have the power to show us the way and give us courage to keep going, I wanted to see if that was true for my guests as well. You're listening to episode number 3. My guest today is my sister Celeste Sage Tate. This is part 2 of a much longer conversation we had about the stories we love.
There's always someone in our stories that is willing to be the one that gives you the lesson. That's what makes great storytelling. And in The Crucible, who was the one who was willing to sacrifice, say, his life for the story to be? I mean, when he was hung, it was like seconds. Everybody went, oh, because it wasn't the outcome they thought it was going to be.
Yeah, they thought he was going to surrender.
Yeah.
Confess. They thought he was going to confess.
They thought he was going to roll over and do all this confessing, and he didn't do it. And they didn't know what to do about that.
Well, actually, I think in real life, that is kind of what happened with the real John Proctor. Is John Proctor and Rebecca Nurse, those were all real people.
They were all real people.
And they were all prominent people in the town. And when they stopped confessing and said, okay, go ahead, hang me.
Right.
Everybody did exactly what you said. It was like, what?
You were supposed to cater to what we want you to do.
Exactly.
You were supposed to fall into fear and still perpetuate a lie. And he refused to perpetuate the lie. Because at the same time when he says, my name will be on this, my family's name will be on this, at the same time, he realizes, because he gets the bigger picture at that point, he realizes he cannot cave in to their fear and lies. And if it means giving up his life, so be it.
Well, and I think that's what happens to a lot of our heroes. Now, it doesn't happen to Atticus, but he doesn't die, but he's willing to put his career on the line to defend this black man.
Right.
And in the book, I think it's so interesting. They play this moment up in the movie when Ewing, no, that's not his name, spits in Atticus's face.
Yes.
And he just looks at him and just takes out his handkerchief and wipes his face off. They don't really play that up in the book as much. But there are people talking about watching it. So Atticus is the kind of person who changes. He's not really super flashy or anything like that, but he changes the people around him who are willing to notice.
Well, and he does it without being preachy. And this is why you and I have talked about this so much, why we love Atticus Finch so much, because he lived his life. He didn't talk his life. Examples, and it reminds us of our father.
Right. Especially that scene where Jem is saying, you got to play football for the Methodists or I won't come down from the tree. And Atticus goes, okay. And he just leaves him in the tree and he goes back in the house. That was our dad.
And you know, that's the thing I think we like about our stories too, is when we watch people without words do their process, and they do the process with peace. And I don't care. I can watch every single thing we've talked about. I can read them. I can watch them. The stories that matter, I can watch them over and over again. And it never gets old for me because I still have things to learn from them.
Yeah.
Like I was talking with you earlier today. You know, Shane really wanted to watch Rise of the Guardians. And that story is so profound. It's a children's story. It's supposed to be a children's story, but it has mature coping skill themes to it. And it's, you know, this darkness wants to take over the world and take the happiness away. And these guardians that are trying, are figuring out, how can we combat this? Well, how they end up combating it is through a unified love of Jack Frost finding his center and finding out why he was even brought into being Jack Frost 500 years ago. Well, when he does this self-exploration of, you know, being faced with this darkness, and as you and I love to say over and over again, the darkness feeds the light, you see so clearly in this story how the darkness does feed the light. Absolutely. He thinks, this darkness thinks he has got control, and then all of a sudden, the illusion taken away.
Shattered.
It's completely shattered, and he doesn't understand why. Where you have to be okay with some people never getting it. And those stories matter too.
Right.
Okay. I learned my lesson. I'm taking care of my story. But if they don't get it, that's okay. Because we as a society, we as people, that's why we like reality TV shows. Some people, I don't. Because you think you get to control the story. It's a participatory process on some mm-hmm. of those. But I also think the people, and I've had to learn to be okay with this, because, you know, those of us who want to progress in our life and want to move forward and become more enlightened and completely feel and have the full knowledge of our connectedness all to each other, want everyone to feel that way.
Yes, we do.
I have had to learn in very hard ways. There's just going to be some people that will never get it, and I have to be okay with that and not friggin' lose sleep over it.
Yeah, and not live with them anymore.
Right. I don't have to be on your life path with you anymore. That's okay. It's that whole saying of reason, season, lifetime. Well, they came into my life for a reason. They had a season with me. Okay, they're not going to have a lifetime with me. I'm okay right. with that. And you just have to release it and allow that to happen. And that's what all these stories are. Atticus Finch, he obviously struggles with the death. You know, he struggles with it.
Yes.
He also comes to terms with it.
With Tom's death. Yeah.
Tom's death.
Yeah.
He comes to terms with that whole process of that. Because what happens at the end of the story? Boo Radley. Boo Radley is so awesome. Because the sheriff says it at the end when the children's lives get saved, the father of the girl, Ewell, gets killed. At first, Atticus is like, Jem killed someone? And then, of course, it's discovered that Boo is hiding behind the door. And the sheriff and he walk out onto the porch. And the sheriff says, I believe justice has been done today. And we're not going to talk about this any further. We all know what really happened with Tom. And we know what happened here. And I think we can be done with that. And that is the lesson of life. Life always figures itself out. And it doesn't have to figure it out with my deep involvement of it. But a lot of people go in my life and go, okay, it's their lesson. I've got my lesson from them. I'm going to move on now.
Well, and the thing about Boo Radley too that I love is they protect him. Because he would not be able to, like the sheriff says, oh, I can see my wife. She would be bringing cakes and she would be,
yes.
you know, or whatever
the
it is.
The whole town would want to take care of him.
Yeah.
Bring him out and be a part of society. And he's not okay with that. That's not the life that Boo wants to live.
Or is used to or capable of living.
Or capable. Which, once again, that in that brief conversation on the porch, they understand his bigger picture and they understand their connection to him and the important role he played that night. Because even the sheriff says, you know, your children would be dead if it wasn't for him. And really, you can't control that he got killed. Yeah, Boo killed him to protect your children, which is self-defense, so to speak. But that's his journey. He was still hanging on to knowing he lived a lie. And that's why he wanted to, it's like Dad used to tell us, the reason why people lash out in pain and do these horrible things to other people is because they have their own inner turmoil and pain that they can't deal with. So they're trying to lash it onto someone else, throw it off onto you. And that's what he was doing in the moment in the woods with the children. If I'm feeling pain, I can throw it onto someone else and make him feel pain too, because he's blaming Atticus Finch for his pain. See, and he was blaming him for exposing something.
That's what I was going to say. I think that Atticus exposed the lie. And right. Even though the jury found Tom guilty, everybody in the town knows that's a lie.
He would be somewhat shunned and he couldn't deal with the pain of that. I think everybody in the town knew probably what his relationship with his daughter, but it was one of those, oh, don't talk about it. We just don't talk about it. Because you didn't know how to approach those kind of subjects back then, because women were still thought of as property, so to speak, especially a daughter. Women didn't have a voice. And so she was just trying to have her voice in any way that she possibly could, because the real story in the horrible, horrific of events that get revealed in the trial is she was just wanting someone to love her in a way that wasn't painful.
Or she was wanting to love someone who was kind and generous.
It was a generous love, not a hurtful love. I'm controlling you. Yeah. And she knew Tom was that kind of man.
Didn't matter to her that he was black. He was
kind. Right. He was kind to her.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like that's one of those many layers of the stories that come out in each one of their stories. You know, Scout has her own story. Jem has his own story. Boo has his own story. The father and daughter have their own story. Tom has his own story. His family has their own story. I mean, there's so many stories going on. I mean, I love it when the sheriff comes to him, you know, the mayor comes to him and says, at the beginning, I want you to defend Tom because you're the only one who can.
Yeah, the judge.
Without any bias. He lived his life in such a way, everyone knew who he was.
He had integrity.
Right. He lived with honor. Mm-hmm. He was a man of his word, never gave you a false statement of who he was, you know, and maybe that's, you know, I really think about Dad all the time. I think the stories that I gravitate towards are stories that I know that Dad and I would have enjoyed reading together and watching together.
Definitely. Because that, you know, a lot of the movies that I love that are classic movies, and now I've read the stories, are ones that I think I got introduced to by Dad.
Right, me too.
A lot of them are.
Yeah. And there were stuff that I did like that Dad was like, you like that, you know? And I'd go, well, give it a try. You're the guy that was always saying you should, you know, you can learn from everything. Dad, that was one of his statements that I absolutely used to love all the time is, you know, learn everything, absorb everything. There's always a lesson in it. So we were raised with get the lesson. And talk about a great life skill to be taught.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, if that was the only thing, which of course was not the only thing that Dad taught us, but if that's the only thing, I mean, that's freaking huge. Get the lesson.
Yes.
And so those are the stories that impact me is the lessons. And that's where we come back to this place of forgiveness and gratitude. You know, everything is there to serve us. Everything. That is the way of the universe having our back. And my favorite quote that I've just rediscovered from A Course in Miracles is when we just say this, we're talking about faith. All the stuff we're talking about is faith in the process. And, you know, Marianne Williamson says it, faith is not blind, it's visionary. So that's the stories that we love. They have vision to them. And we obviously want that vision to continue, because how many times, I can't think of one time where we don't finish watching something as a family, or you and I finish watching something and we all have to continue the story in our talk.
In our discussions.
In our discussions about it.
Well, that's why I loved it when we started watching all of the MCU movies, because Shane and Ariel loved them so much.
Yes.
And Barry and I learned to love them too, because they are so deep.
They are.
Stan Lee and whoever else helped him create some of those stories. Right. Oh my gosh, they're just...
Talk about visionary.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
And I love what you say. They're our modern day mythology. Oh, I tell that to people and they go, Oh, your sister's right. That's why they impact us all so much.
Well, and Star Wars is that way. Star Trek is that way. The DC ones are that way. I mean, there are bunches of them.
Yes, there's. Well, and really, so is Shakespeare. So is Jane Austen. They tell these stories that mean something to us. And that's why we keep revisiting them. These common themes pop up all the time. You know, and really, the common theme at the end of the MCU, when it's the end game and Tony Stark makes his choice, people are really unsettled with that still to this day. But all you have to do is listen to Pepper. You struggled long enough. It's okay. That's all. That's it.
Well, and he is the ultimate person that you were talking about earlier about having to be busy all the time. His mind is always busy and he never sleeps and he always takes all these pills so that he can stay awake and he can do all this stuff. And, you know, sometimes when I'm watching those Iron Man movies, I'm exhausted at the end.
Well, and he's tinkering after when they have the confrontation in New York and he has that PTSD and he can't sleep and he's tinker, tinker, tinker. It is exhausting. But that's the intention. As viewers, we're supposed to go, holy crap, just let it go. Find a way to release from that. And his story arc is really interesting because what happens? He blames Captain America and Winter Soldier.
Which I have to say, Captain America is my favorite character. Maybe it's because of how old I am now. But he always has the bigger picture.
He does.
He always see, and Tony doesn't. And for a long time, Tony doesn't.
And Captain America is willing to sit back and examine it and breathe.
Right.
And that's why they clash, because Tony Stark is not. It's all go, 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 go. Just go do it. Just go do it. We'll figure it out later.
Exactly. Well, and there are other characters that have sort of similar qualities to Captain America. Black Panther has that quality. Doctor Strange, finally. Doctor Strange is sort of a combination of Tony Stark and Captain America, because finally he gets to that place where Captain America is.
Well, and the other one is Thor has to go through his own.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that the kids and I always point out is not one of the characters, none of their stories have picture perfect lives where they haven't experienced tragedy. Every single one of them have some sort of major loss that altered their lives.
And that's why I'm so excited to see the one with Scarlett Johansson. What was her
Black Widow.
Yeah, because now we get to find out her backstory, because I always thought it was her story seemed to be so interesting. We only get inklings of it.
Yeah.
And how she and Hawkeye, how did they meet? And, you know, why are they such good friends? And
he so trusts her with everything.
Yes.
And vice versa.
So I want to know more about those two, because so interesting.
Well, and how throughout their story arc, before we know their beginning stories, of how at Endgame, when you see what Hawkeye's been doing for 5 years, exacting revenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And when she finds him and brings him back in to this place of, it's all going to be okay. He's like, look what I've done. Look what I've done. And these horrible things.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the choice of who's going to be sacrificed, she's like, no, you have things to live for. I'm done. I don't have to do anything anymore. I can end this. You have a family that will be saved and you will get to be with.
Yeah.
But each one, the buildup of the entire arc of the whole Marvel, every single one of all the Black Panthers, we still have more Black Panthers to see. We got two more movies of them. We still have another Thor that's getting ready to come out. I love how they create this arc of background, present, and that there is a brighter future.
Yes.
And we don't know what that's going to bring, but that each one of the tragedies that has happened also has served a purpose. And they've recognized and are totally aware of what they were stepping into. And with fear, but they knew that they had to save humanity. And then you and I constantly talk about the whole story of Thanos. His story. I mean, what he came from. Okay, well, if you don't sacrifice some, then he wants to control that. wants to control it because his planet and his home was destroyed, and he couldn't control that, but he's going to control this, by golly, and he's going to make that happen no matter what. He's willing to sacrifice all these things and all these people so he can control it.
Yeah, right.
He can keep up this illusion of control. And he feels still to the end how completely justified he was in all of that. And he can't figure out why everybody else doesn't see it that way. What's the matter with you? Which goes back to allowing the process to happen. He was not allowing that process to happen. And that's what staying busy does. And that's what blaming other people does. Because each story, I think that every story we're talking about here, it is an illusion that everything is supposed to be smooth and pretty and not have ugly. Life is hard.
Right. Gosh, a book that came out so long ago by M. Scott Peck, The Road Less Traveled. The very first line is, life is difficult. And I remember when I read that, I went, life is difficult, and I think it's supposed to be easy. And it's not just difficult for me, it's difficult for everyone. Right. And I was thinking it was difficult only for me.
Well, we do get into that place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's really easy. It doesn't matter how well you and I were raised by our fabulous parents. I have been in that place where I think I'm alone in the crap. I mean, every story that we talk about, there's always one or two characters that think they're alone in their story and alone in the hardship and alone in this and alone in that. And no, we're not.
Right.
And that's why we love some of the stories that we love, because even at the end, if someone dies or several people die, the end story is we're not alone. You know, even if something as silly and ridiculous as Die Hard.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it seems nonsensical, but it's not. It's a great story. It's problem solving. It's critical thinking. And really, you know, because Jamie is a fan of all Stephen King's stories. He even reads his horror genre. When we sit and talk about his stuff, it's like, well, his stories all kind of have similar themes, don't they? Just some involve ugly creatures.
Yeah.
Or people, you know, like The Shining or Cujo. Jamie and I were talking about this, was a long time ago. And I kind of laughed. I went, oh my God, Stephen King, you know, you had me fooled. Or, oh gosh, M. Night Shyamalan. He is one of my all-time favorites. Yeah. He wraps it, his stories into what this illusion of horror. And then
or fantasy.
But it really, you come out the end and it's all about connectedness and love. And
right.
Find out about yourself. That's the stories I like. That's the stories that I thrive on. You know, and I've told Shane and Arielle, at some point when I feel like they're ready, you know, we will watch The Sixth Sense, because it's so much more than the scary stuff. Because when you're done with the story, it's not scary anymore. And all his stories are that way. Signs.
Well, and what's the one about the girl in the water or whatever it is?
Paul Giamatti, isn't it, right?
Yes. Everybody in the apartment complex has to come together to help the woman.
Unification. There you go, once again. Signs. His story. Mel Gibson's story. He was a minister. Loses his wife in this surprise tragic accident. And she says something that seems so meaningless as she's dying. Use the bat. And then all those years he spends hating God, rejecting love, rejecting everything that had to do with goodness, because his goodness and his love was all wrapped up in her. He gave her his power. And so the story presents him with this trauma for him to find himself.
To find his peace and to find out his purpose.
To find his purpose. It's so beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Another one that's really great is The Village.
I like that one too.
Village is so good. Once again, the story arcs. There's not just one story. There's not just one person. Everybody's got a story. And, you know, in The Sixth Sense, you've got several stories going on there. That's great storytelling. These people that aren't one-dimensional. And that's after reading, and I'm reading them both at the same time, but, you know, I'm back to reading Seed of the Soul, and he talks about the multi-sensory that we're coming into. That's what all these stories are. And that's what we love about, we don't know we love about it, Back to the Future. How many times does he say to Marty, Marty, you're thinking two-dimensionally. And every single one of them.
Right, yeah.
Marty's like, yeah, I keep doing that. I don't know why I keep doing that. <You know? laughs> because it's bigger. And that's the stories that we love that take us to these places of thinking outside of a safe box.
Yeah.
You and I, and storytellers that are courageous, are willing to step outside of our comfort zone. And yes, this whole thing that's going on planetarily, boy, is this taking people outside of their comfort zones.
It definitely is. Can't wait to see the stories that are going to come out afterwards.
People that have been in isolation and the stories that they're writing and the stories they're creating.
Well, and there's all the creativity that's going on too. Like Dave Dahl, my friend that is an actor, a professional actor, he's getting groups of people together to do these readings of Shakespeare plays. Because it's not well known probably, but a lot of the theaters, when they closed, a lot of people lost their contracts. They lost their income.
You know, yeah, they're having to come up with these creative ways to still entertain and to be out there for people.
And stay connected.
And to stay connected. And I'm really having fun watching all these people that are musicians. Rick Springfield is teaching you how to play the guitar and some of his songs on the guitar. Yeah, yeah. I love that. I absolutely love it. He's doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and many other artists that we haven't heard from in years.
Yeah.
Mary Chapin Carpenter the other day. Amy Grant wrote a song for all of the people that are still working. The creativity it's bringing out in people is fantastic. Yeah. And you're right. When all of this is done, what are the stories that are going to be told?
Yeah.
Because once again, it's connecting us. It's keeping us connected.
Yeah.
And that's the question. When do stories matter?
Right.
When do people's lives start to matter to you?
And that's the, you know, that's the thing where we are. Do we care about each other or not?
Right.
Okay. Well, we've been talking for quite a while now. Do you have one story that you keep going back to over and over and over again that you would like to recommend to our listeners?
Okay. We've mentioned several, but the one I think of right now is actually Pride and Prejudice. I think probably at least two times a month I have to watch it, because I think the story that I get from it is judgment. It says it right in the title, Pride and Your Prejudice. And the judgment that the preconceived notion that you have of how someone else thinks and feels because of their position in life. So Pride and Prejudice is on both of their sides. There's a prejudice and pride in Lizzie and a prejudice and a pride in him. And her pride and her prejudice is, well, how could he possibly be lovable? Because I overheard him say some things and the way he behaves so pridefully, there's no way I could possibly ever love this man. And he struggles with his pride and his prejudice because she is a woman that is not within his class. And how his family would judge him, his pride cannot let him go there.
Well, and also, she's not the regular docile.
No, she's not typical. She keeps doing things outside of the norm, which of course causes him to fall in love with her.
Right.
So I think, to me, that the basic lesson of Pride and Prejudice is Pride and Prejudice. And what does that serve you in your life? And in the long run, you learn it doesn't serve you at all. And what I love about each character with Lizzie and Darcy is they come to this place of surrender and the enrichment that they get in their life because they surrender to the love.
Yes.
And they are willing and allow, they learn that allowing of learning more about each other.
I love that too.
That's what we're here for, to learn more about each other and to take those lessons from each other and become better. Better than I was yesterday. Better than I was 10 minutes ago. I think that's why you and I have such long conversations. Because at the end, I don't feel exhausted. I don't feel like, oh my God, I can't believe I talked to her so long. I feel like that made a difference.
Yeah, right. Yes, we do have long conversations. So I think the one to be just a little different, one of the ones that I absolutely love is Now Voyager with Bette Davis, because I think I relate to her because she didn't love herself. She felt like she, she had a terribly controlling mother, which I didn't really have a terribly controlling mother, but she doesn't love herself. And through the process of the movie, she learns social skills. She learns coping skills. She learns how to socialize. I was very shy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we moved so much is what helped me learn social skills and how to watch the lay of the land of the new place that we were living in, the new school, and then figure out how to navigate that. And so now Voyager is one of my favorites because in the end, she realizes that service is how she's going to be happy. Service to other people.
Yeah, service to others. And the impact of her evolution. That's one of my favorite stories too, by the way. Pretty much there's a lot of Betty Davis that I can watch numerous times.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because I believe Betty Davis was one of those people that wanted to make impactful stories and bring them out. But now Voyager is definitely one of my favorites because I love watching her growth and how it not only affects her, but affects her niece, who was so critical of her.
Oh, right.
And the doctor. He thought things were a certain way with everybody. And she teaches him it's not.
Well, and talk about love. There's that unusual love relationship between her and Jerry is the character name.
Paul Henreid,
right. And his daughter. He's married. She knows it from the very beginning. But they do fall in love with each other. And then they decide that his daughter, who is going through very similar situation to what Betty Davis went through, that they can help her together. They don't have to be married to each other, but they can have contact with each other and help Tina. That's her name.
And the thing is, that story is timeless. And that's something else that I think needs to be brought up before we wrap this up is we love timeless stories.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Celeste, for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
And now
I want to do more, but I know I can't.
Well, you probably will. I'll have you on the show again.
I hope you enjoyed the show. If you liked what you heard, please share it with a friend and give us a review on your favorite podcast app. It will help people find us. You'll find the show notes for this episode at my website, Sage Woman Chronicles, at sagewoman.life. You can leave a comment there. And remember, as Philip Pullman said, after nourishment, shelter, and companionship, stories are the thing we need most in the world. Until next time, this is Lucinda Sage Midgordon. Thanks for listening.